My name is Chris Deasy, and it was a huge pleasure for this week's Nostalgia interview to catch up with Rhianna Patterson. Now, Rhianna is an accredited coach, she's a social entrepreneur, a TEDx speaker, a mental health advocate, and she is the founder of the Dominica Dementia Foundation. Rhianna has also done film work for an NHS client on the importance of music for people with dementia. And in our interview, Rhianna talks about the importance of celebrating older people. We find out why Rhianna became involved in this research and the stigma around it, and she discusses how we have come a long way in terms of how we deal with grief. Born in Hackney and raised in Dominica, Rhianna came to the University of Kent to study psychology. She graduated in 2020. And Rhianna talks about how she has retraced the timeline and story of her grandparents. We talk about how there is so much more to a person than, say, their job, and why it is important to have human conversations. Now, Rhianna's earliest memories include going to the beach with her grandparents. We find out that from a young age, she perfected the art of video editing. She talks about how her musical tastes have changed. We find out about the live acts that she has seen. She played football with Goldlink, and she also reveals that she would love to meet her namesake, Rhianna. We learn what prompted Rhianna to study psychology, why coming to Kent was such a shock because of the traditions she was leaving behind. She was involved in the Caribbean Union. We find out about the lecturers who inspired her and why the Kent Pole Fitness Society was especially important. Then towards the end of the interview, we learn about the values that Rhianna is keen to uphold and about the log she keeps of what she does and about her goals, as well as why her 15-year-old self would be flawed if she saw what Rhianna is doing now. And at the very end of the interview, Rhianna talks about how, if she looks back at all, it is in order to look forward. What an immense pleasure, a huge inspiration to meet Rhianna Patterson for the latest in my series of nostalgia interviews. My name is Chris Deasy. Well, it is my great pleasure this week for my Nostalgia Interviews podcast to meet Rhianna Patterson. And we were just saying, Rhianna, that you were a student at the University of Kent until not too many years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I graduated almost at the cusp of COVID, so 2020, and then in person this year, 2022.
Yeah, no, you did really well considering that. I was just saying as well that my own students from, 2019, so just before COVID hit, they finally graduated this week at Canterbury Cathedral. And that was such a relief because the journey along the way has, as it was obviously for you in the latter stages, somewhat disruptive. But do you want to say a bit about what you studied at Kent?
Yeah, absolutely. I studied psychology at the University of Kent. So that was my degree, a bachelor's degree.
Yeah. And you're doing, because we have a mutual friend, of course, in Rachel Jeffrey, who I interviewed a few months ago. And she was very keen for us to do this interview. And I saw your website, but it's better in your words. Do you want to just say a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I wear many hats, as you can tell on my website. But I guess most importantly, I would say I'm a social entrepreneur, a TEDx speaker and founder of the Dominica Dementia Foundation.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And is that something that you started doing after your degree?
So with the foundation, it's something I started. Yeah, there was a gap year. So I launched that in 2016, and then came to University of Kent in 2017. The entrepreneur hat is something that I've been able to take ownership and wear most recently just after university. And the TEDx actually is something that I did whilst I was at the University of Kent, because there was a TEDx group at the University of Kent, so I did my talk through the group.
Yeah, and it sounds as though, so you did your degree, and it just sounds as though things have steamrolled, you know, in the years since then, because your website, and anyone who listens to this interview will obviously have, I'll make sure that there's a link to it, but you do everything from like life coaching, you do media work, I think you've even done some film work, is that right?
Yeah, so I've done some film work for an NHS client, which was quite exciting. They hired me to do some work on the importance of music for people with dementia. So I would come to the sessions and the people with dementia would kind of learn how to play an instrument of their choice. And it was quite interesting to see and hear their feedback on how they feel like during the project, what's their emotions, what's their thoughts when they're playing these instruments, and just the sensory activity associated with playing the instruments. And I very much enjoyed it. I just had a blast learning more about these people and their groups. So that was that. And then another project I'm working on is Dementia, The Island Journey, which is my personal project, where I will be directing a documentary on dementia in the Caribbean. So with a focus on Dominica, but other islands will be involved, like Barbados, Jamaica, St. Lucia. I want it to be a regional conversation and a regional key to action for policymakers, for NGOs, and just for anyone really to just kind of take action on dementia, because it is definitely a global issue. And you know, we've got things like COVID going on. Dementia is also rising as well, as we're an aging population. So I kind of want to highlight that, but I also want to highlight celebrating the older people, because that's something that we don't do as much. But you know, they've got wealth of experience, wealth of knowledge, you know, just amazing stories that we just need to amplify and just recognize with and celebrate. So I'm hoping that I can change the narrative of aging and older people and just dementia in general through this project. So it's quite exciting. It's very informative, but on the flip side, it's also very vibrant and engaging.
And that just sounds so incredible, because I mean, everyone, I suspect, has had a family member who, you know, maybe a grandparent or a parent who has had dementia. And that's certainly been the case in my life. And it was just funny because you mentioned COVID. And I was just thinking that I remember one day I couldn't wait to see the film, you know, the Anthony Hopkins film, The Father, which deals with that very issue. And I remember that was the time when we had to do like 2 COVID tests a week, you know, to be on campus. And everything was fine. But I was like, I really want to see this film. I heard so many good things about it. But I think you're right, because what it does, it puts on the map something that certainly I remember in my own grandmother's case, it's obvious that she had dementia, but it was something that was kind of brushed under the carpet a bit, or at least my grandfather, I think, was keen not to almost like acknowledge that, because obviously he didn't want to lose his wife. But we all knew that something wasn't quite right. So I think the sort of research that you're doing, or the sort of activities that you're doing, is just phenomenal, because it's actually bringing it out into the public consciousness.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, I love what I do. It's just been a journey, honestly. I've been working in this field since 2016, 2017, and we're in 2022 now. So, yeah, it's been a lot of just learning about the community, a lot of diaspora support, and yeah, it's just been quite exciting, challenging in some aspects, but for the most part, quite exciting.
Yeah. And it would be great to talk about the diaspora element of this, because obviously you're looking at particular communities. So is that sort of very personal to you? Is that sort of where you've got a lot of connections, a lot of family maybe?
Yeah, well, my grandfather, he passed away with dementia when I was 16. So that really is what kind of, I guess, brought me into this new world of mental health and dementia and aging, because I just wanted to learn more about the human brain, human behavior, why we do what we do, and how I can support and how I can amplify the resources for our community. Because I feel like there is quite a strong stigma when it comes to dementia and mental health and seeking support. So I'm just hoping that I can bring about further change through research, through community initiatives. And that's why I kind of built the Dominica Dementia Foundation to kind of tackle this. So it's not just myself, but I have a team. It's like a youth-led board of directors. So the young people are just taking it forward and, yeah, just bringing a youthful perspective towards dementia, which is quite exciting to see.
Absolutely. And do you find that there are some communities that are better, or for that matter, not so good than others in terms of recognising this and dealing with this, in terms of the sort of support that's there, even just sometimes maybe in previous decades, at any rate, the taboo that's associated with the loss, because obviously it's the loss of personality as well, and a lot of the concerns inevitably that happens when somebody close to you is perhaps no longer recognizable as the person who they were in a previous generation.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we've come a long way in terms of dealing with grief, acknowledging it, and even through different systems like the working world, I think they're more receptive to this type of things, and like mental health days and you know, various breaks. And I think it's amazing to see these things in place, because it will really help us in the long term in juggling work life and family and everything that comes with it. So,
and do you want to say a little bit about your own background? Because one of the things I'm always very keen to find out, especially, and in some cases it applies to people who I always think I know when I do the interview. Obviously, this is the first time that we've met, but suddenly you sort of, you know, discover all these sometimes accidental, maybe sometimes deliberate sort of pathways to where they are now. And you're like, oh, you know, you could have ended up doing something very, very different, you know, if you'd taken a different sort of fork in the road at an earlier stage in your life. But do you want to say a little bit about your background, where, and, well, obviously I'm not asking you to give away dates, but, you know, where you were born?
Yeah, definitely. So I was born in Hackney, actually. And then I went to Dominica with my grandmother. And then, yeah, I was pretty much raised in that environment, and then came to the UK for university and been here ever since.
And what about your parents? What did they do?
So my mom, she's unemployed at the moment, but she has worked in, I guess, aromatherapy and care. And then my father, he passed away. So I don't know too much about him, but I knew that he was a doctor. So we do come from a line of medicine or some form of like therapy, which is quite nice. And yeah.
And it sounds, I mean, it really sounds like the sense I'm getting from you, and actually, obviously, the theme of this podcast is nostalgia, but it sounds as though that it's really important to you that you're tracing those roots, that, as you say, you didn't know your father, but it's clearly important to actually establish those connections, those shared memories, obviously dealing with dementia as well, that sense maybe of an integration there, at least maybe situating yourself in the context of your family background. You obviously were talking about the diaspora a bit earlier on, but sort of bringing together. I always see the diaspora for me takes on many connotations. One of them is the fact that people may be dispersed, but there's a sense of, it's not necessarily bringing them back together, you know, geographically, but it's ensuring that everyone is sort of accounted for on the map, and then at least there are sort of little satellites, little constellations that you, where you can reach out to those individuals who might be spread out in different communities.
Oh, definitely, Chris. I mean, even with my grandfather, he passed away in 2013, and then my grandmom passed away in my second year of university. So I think that was 2019. So now I don't have any living grandparents. So for me, seeing their tangible, I guess, rewards for their years of service is quite useful for me, because I can't ask them, you know, how did you get the house? How did you get this and finances and adulting? But I can retrace their timeline and their story and their history. And then I can then get the answers that I need. So it's been quite powerful in that way to see that they've, you know, accomplished so much things in their life, and that was their legacy. I can now rediscover it and create my own legacy. So yeah, it's been quite powerful retracing family's stories and steps.
Yeah, because sometimes, and I find this even at funerals sometimes, when you discover more about somebody, not necessarily, I don't necessarily mean family members, but it can be family sometimes, when you discover more about them through maybe like the eulogy or after they've passed away. And that was actually one of the impetuses for the, or impeti, for the podcast, because I was sometimes, you know, going to a funeral of somebody who was like a work colleague and somebody who passed away, and then you find out things about them, so you learn about the non-work side of what they did, and you think, gosh, I wish I'd had those conversations, you know, the things that seemed to define them but which didn't really come alive, or were, you know, were not really discussed while they were members of staff here. So it was a case of almost sort of saying, well, you know, why aren't we having those sort of conversations? And so the podcast is a good way of quite a holistic sort of enterprise, really, of ensuring that you sort of get to see somebody in their wholeness, rather than just, you know, defining them by their research or their teaching.
Definitely, there's so much more to a person than, you know, their awards, their accolades, you know, this, that, and the other. Some people, they love fishing, and you wouldn't know that until you actually bring up a conversation about, oh yeah, you just went fishing last week, and you're like, oh wow, I like fish, this, that, and the other, this type of fishes, and then you go off a tangent. So it's really remarkable when people just remember to have these kind of human conversations. It's not always about targets, it's not always about work and this and that and the other. It is sometimes just having surface level conversations, and it just turns into something else, which is always good, because I think, yeah, the more that we connect on a level that is human, I would say human Chrissy, you know, would be more beneficial, because the more that you learn about the person on outside of work, the more that they feel more connected to you, and they want to, like, I guess, open more up as well. So it builds a level of rapport and trust.
And you just made me think as well, because sometimes when I'm on social media, the version of me that comes out, may, you know, it's not incompatible with the me that who teaches my students. But sometimes I think, I'm not sure I want my students to see this, because I mean, it's just the sort of the professional sort of line. But it's always interesting after graduation, the number of students who say, now that we've graduated, is it okay if we friend you on Facebook? And they probably then see all these, you know, film reviews or whatever, the sort of they start to see a bit more. So they might see me teaching in the classroom, but then they sort of see a bit more about the background to some of the things I do. And I have to say, I think, you know, we're all human in that sense. And I kind of, maybe, you know, sure, it's nice when people have a bit of a mystery to them. But, you know, I look back at the people who taught me when I was at university 30 years ago, and you always think, so, you know, what were they doing when they weren't in the lecture room? And often if you ever saw them in the supermarket, you'd think, what are they doing in the shops? You know, they belong in the lecture room. You know, seeing them buying cereal or something, it feels like, no, that just doesn't seem right. You know, I'm not used to seeing them in that context.
Definitely. I've definitely had that as well. Like when I was in primary school and I'm on the weekend with my gran and stuff, and we're just doing, you know, our normal grocery, and I'll see a teacher and I'll be like, hi miss, how are you? And then, you know, I'll see them like literally in the same shop that we're shopping at, and they're like checking out clothes and they're doing all these kind of, like, it's normal, but in your head, particularly for them, and because you see them on an educational basis, it's just weird. It's just like, what are you doing? Like, this is just not it. So I completely empathize with you when you say that. For sure, I can definitely relate to that experience.
Yeah, and I always find it's quite funny, because I've always kept a diary. And so it's quite funny. You sort of look back sometimes at all the things you write about people, and you're thinking, you know, it's hard. I think it's a lot harder these days for people to have, like, no sort of, you know, social media presence, because, and often, of course, it's older people, as I learned some years ago, because often the people who you see on Facebook are actually those retired teachers. So it's really funny when you see people who've, you know, in their 60s and 70s, and it may be decades since you last saw them, and they're extremely active, and you think, you know, goodness me, I would never have thought, you know, that in some cases they literally let their hair down, and you know, you think, that's not the person who taught me. Then you reflect on it and you think, but why not? Because when you're like 8 or 9, if you're like, you know, primary school age, then obviously you have a particular vision of what somebody's like and the sort of characteristics or the sort of the things that you imagine them doing in the world they inhabit. But when you're a bit older yourself, you think, well, no, of course they had a life, they had families, they had commitments, and that there was a bit more to them. And, you know, sure, they went to the cinema or they went to music gigs, that sort of thing. And why shouldn't they?
Absolutely, I agree. Everyone deserves a break. I mean, seeing, I've got some teachers on my Facebook, and seeing them like go to places like France and Germany and on vacation, you know, as you should do. It's been, I guess, really nice to see, because I've seen the work that they put out with their children, the children that they teach and stuff. So yeah, it's now that I'm at the age I am, I can acknowledge, like, you know, this is quite rewarding for them. Like, you know, they work as anyone works. So yeah, why not?
And what about the things that influenced you when you were growing up in terms of things like earliest memories? Is there anything that particularly makes you sort of, you look back and think, yes, that was the sort of the things that you remember most vividly from childhood?
Earliest memories, I think just going on the beach, you know, with my grandparents and my mom, like after school or even on the weekend, and just chilling, you know, throwing stones in the sea and yeah, just kind of relaxing. I remember like just the cool breeze. It's just Oh, I can just feel it right now. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, there's no word to describe it. It's just pure relaxation, pure bliss. Like, I think people, they see, like, I guess people in their 16s or if they're 15 and they're like, oh, this person's really not going for a lot. But I mean, you'd be surprised, especially now. You know, young people are really going for it. And at that time, I feel like just being on the beach, not thinking about anything, not thinking about schoolwork, just with my family was just everything for me, you know? And it still is even more now. So, yeah, just having that time, that just downtime was just fantastic. And then I think also Christmas time, you know, just cooking up all the food. Well, I wouldn't cook, but at that time, just like facilitating cooking, I should say. But yeah, my gran would be more of the cook in the house. But yeah, she would cook all this great food, like roast potato, chicken, and then would put it all in the van, and then just go somewhere and eat it, you know, for Christmas. So it's just kind of like those kind of things I definitely remember. And just every time I think about it, I just got a big smile on my face because it's just bringing back, you know, really good memories that just make me feel great. And just remembering the emotions of everyone, just laughing and having a good time, it just makes me happy. It's one of them feel good things.
And what really comes out, you know, from what you're saying is the importance of family. That is very, very clear. But also, I think you've touched on something really important, which is that, you know, often it's not the sort of the big events, the big rituals, or the sort of, you know, the sort of the unusual, the extraordinary. It's the everyday. It's the things that you perhaps often miss are the things that in themselves don't sound remarkable. They're just like the, as you say, listening to the, you know, the sound of the beach or throwing a stone or whatever it might be, or something, or the weather. But actually, it's those things that kind of situate you, that give you a context. And it's funny, isn't it, that sometimes, like holidays, you know, you can go on an amazing holiday and see all these great sights, but sometimes you just want to just go back to the hotel or somewhere and have a nice coffee or a beer or something, and just something very simple. And that's when you chill, to use your word earlier. You just sort of think, yeah, this is all right. This is what I want to do, you know. And sometimes you sort of discover lots of things about yourself sometimes from the way you deal with some of these momentous or not momentous, you know, things from childhood.
Definitely. I completely agree.
Yeah. And what about things like music or film? Did that ever play an important role when you were growing up?
Oh, 100%. I think because I was an only child, I would do a lot of video editing and, you know, just researching various things on the internet. So I kind of, from a very young age, kind of perfected the skill of editing. And I would make all these like small videos, you know, with like my dolls and stuff like that, and stop motion, and you know, just getting really creative with the edits and stuff. I enjoyed it. I even had like a small YouTube channel, and it's quite interesting because I've got a YouTube channel now, but it's not the same one that I had when I was younger. But I kind of keep that momentum and skill with me, and I mean, thank goodness YouTube is still here, so you know, using the same platform as well, it's just easier because I've already kind of associated myself with the platform. So there was that. And then photography has also been a skill that I've always had, just taking videos and pictures of family, of moments, you know, very important moments in the family. I've always been one to just take pictures, and I'm so glad that I kind of kept on that kind of notion, because I have pictures of my gran the last time I saw her before she passed. So it's a really good thing that I've just been taking photos, because you really never know when's the last time you're going to see someone. So just having those kind of pictures, it makes it even more memorable. And then, you know, archiving it and things like that. But yeah, I think photography and film has been a skill set I've been able to bring along with me all throughout my life. And then with music, yeah, I've always been listening to music, listening to music with friends. My music taste has changed. It used to be like punk rock a little bit, or something like that. I don't know. It was, I'm trying to remember one of the songs. I don't know, One Direction at some point, and all kinds of stuff. But there are some genres like R&B that I have been listening throughout my childhood, especially BET. When the BET Awards were around, I would gather my whole family and would watch it together, and everyone loved it because they're just like, let me know when it's time, let me know when it's time. Because at that time, you know, we didn't really have, like, you couldn't record a TV show. Like, if you miss it, you've missed it. So just gathering around everyone, and would, you know, that was definitely something that we always used to do. Whenever the BET Awards was on, we would be front center at the TV. So that's something I definitely enjoy as well. But yeah, I mean, in terms of music, yeah, it's changed drastically, but some of the music that associated with like BT channel, I keep going with it. Even like going back to like the 20s, the music that was back in that time, I still listen to the music from the 20s and the 90s, because that's the years that were, for me, really rich music. So listening to it now, it really brings me back to that time, and just, I guess I was like three anyways, but it does still bring me back to that time anyways, when life was simple and you can just listen to music, just enjoy it. Yeah.
I was just laughing to myself when you said that your musical tastes have changed, because actually, although I think actually what you said at the end there actually fits completely with where I am, because I actually find that the stuff I listened to when I was really young, like 7 or 8 years of age, so the stuff like from the very early 80s, because I was born in 1973, so that sort of era, I've never let go of it. So that's still my go-to music. So the stuff when I was in primary school, I listened to the charts every week on the radio. And that, you know, it's 40 years now, and my fascination for that music has never diminished. And I also think, and I kind of like that, because my children look at it and sometimes think, you know, Daddy, this is like old person's music. You know, I think, well, yeah, yes, I suppose. They're very young, by the way. They're allowed to say that, you know, when they're in their single figures. If they're a bit older, I probably would think, you know, how rude. But actually, I think it's so important, because it's an identity marker. And also what I find is that when I listen back and think back to those, you know, the first time I heard those sounds, what I remember, and this perhaps fits in with some of the things that you've been saying, you remember those family events, you remember those, the people that you were with, you remember the big events, and it's the congregation, the coming together of family members around the radio. You know, they may not have liked all the music, but you remember that sort of sense that this is what people were talking about, and you remember, oh, my dad hated that particular song, or my mum didn't mind it, or whatever it might be. And then it forms a whole sort of tapestry of personal identity.
100%, 100%. I think music is not just to be enjoyed by yourself. Like, even now, my boyfriend, he knows that I just love music, and he knows the type of music that I like as well. So when he finds good music, he always sends it to me. And I really appreciate that, because not a lot of people get it. But, you know, when they actually take time out of their day to just say, oh yeah, I saw this song and I think you will like it, I just think it's amazing, because I love finding new music, and then we can talk about it, be like, oh yeah, that's quite cool, and then maybe it might just branch out into, oh, let's go and see this person live maybe, and you know, so it is quite a social thing as well, which is quite nice to see.
Yeah, and have you seen many live acts as a result of listening to this music?
I have seen a few people live, some even by mistake. I was literally, what shop was it? I can't remember now. Oh, but it was a shop nearby the concert, and there was another singer coming to support the person that I came to see, and I was just like, I knew her, it's Hamza, and she was literally here just buying, you know, your regular fries and stuff like that. And I was just like, Hamza, like, I was just taken aback, because I didn't expect to just see her like this. And we had a really nice talk, and then she went to enjoy the concert just like myself. So, yeah, it was quite nice to see her. She wasn't live, which was even better, because we just had that one-to-one conversation. But, yeah, I've seen Jack James. He's kind of like a up-and-coming singer that's doing, like, I guess modern R&B, which I really enjoy. And then I've seen, I booked to see Kyle, but I didn't get to see him because the show was cancelled. And then I saw Mahalia. I'm quite a fan of her as well. And I thought she was amazing. And I like how most of them, they do bring along up and coming artists to come and join them on the stage as well. I just think it's fantastic when they do that, because you never know who's coming. You're like, oh, who's next? So that's quite nice as well. But yeah, I think that's the only two people I've seen so far. Oh, yes, no. I've seen Craig David as well. Not particularly to see him, but he was part of the Queen's birthday concert. And then he was one of the performers as well. So, yeah.
I can never make up my mind whether I like, you know, because if you see an artist live, that could be amazing. But of course, if you already think you know the song, because maybe it's like in my days growing up, it was always like records, obviously later years CD and so on. So it's always a sort of says, you know, that's, you know, what's the original version? What's the optimum way of doing it? So if I'm at a live gig, I think, oh, you know, they're going to have to do a really good job here to sort of make me actually think that this is, you know, an improvement on the original or whatever. But often it is. And also just seeing the artist there, just having them within, you know, a stone's throw away from where you are, you know, or in your case, actually speaking to art, actually meeting them, that's a stage further than I've normally gone. So actually meeting them.
Oh, actually, sorry, when you just said that, I just thought about Gold Link as well. I met him and we actually played football together, and it was just absolutely insane, because it was just God, because I was on Instagram that day and he was just like, hey, is anyone down to play football? And I was just like, oh my gosh, I need to make my way there. Made my way there. There were a couple of people that also got the message that he sent on Instagram. And we were just vibing, eating fruit, playing football together. It was just a fantastic day. And he's not always based in London as well. He's based in the States. And I'm just the biggest fan of Gold Link. So to actually just be with him one-on-one was just mind-blowing, honestly. He's such a cool guy. So yeah, there was that as well.
And it's lovely how you mentioned Instagram, but how a lot of these barriers can come down. I suppose even doing like a podcast like this is a way of getting to know people sort of accessibly. Because, you know, when I was young, I remember the way sometimes you'd very rarely actually get to meet your hero sort of thing. You might like hear them on the radio, but often you'd have like fan mail. I remember actually people would actually write letters, or they'd be like, fans would have their own, you know, that they'd run a particular fan club for an artist. And then what you do is you'd pay a certain subscription and you'd get all the records, all the signatures and all the sort of signed stuff. If there's a book out, whatever. So you get it all that sort of way, but all that done through the post. And, you know, it's actually quite exciting waiting for something to come in the post. You could get all these artifacts and you know, all this memorabilia. But actually with social media, you know, what's lovely about what you've just recounted is that some of these artists are really there, that they're actually very personable, and actually, which is probably my next question in that sense, you know, do you ever find sometimes that when you meet your heroes, sometimes they can either disappoint, or you can sort of say, yeah, that corroborates, you know, why this person is so important to me, because they're just such a lovely, lovely person.
Yeah, thankfully, I haven't actually met anyone that kind of didn't bring it up to speed. I think if I met Rihanna, which is the next person I just want to meet, I'm just hoping that I meet her. Not because we have the same name, but she's from Barbados. I'm from Dominica. And I'm just in awe, absolutely floored by her accomplishments. And I just love her music as well. So to meet her would just be everything to me. And I think if it wasn't, I'll be completely heartbroken. I'll unfollow her and everything. I would stop listening to me. I would just wash my hands. That would be it, because I have been following her journey since the beginning. Again, on BET, like when Rihanna was popping and, you know, doing music, I was always there listening to the music, watching her interviews. So yeah, it would just break my heart if she doesn't bring it to speed. Honestly, it would be just, yeah, terrible.
Well, I can imagine the documentary that will come out in the future will be called When Rihanna Met Rihanna. and it all started through this podcast.
I was just thinking that. I mean, can you imagine? I think that would be incredible. Yeah. I would definitely have to mention you. I'd be like, it was all Chris's idea. He made it happen.
Well, you never know, because who knows? I'm sure that Rihanna has people who have people who have people who might stumble across this podcast and say, "Hey, look at this! We've got a story here that we can run with," you know. And she'd love to show that she's worthy of your acclamation. So we'll keep that one posted. Do you want to say a bit, Rhianna, about your journey to the University of Kent in terms of what it was that made you study psychology and what you remember about your 3 years at the University of Kent?
Yeah, so I've got a family member that lives in Canterbury, Kent. So I was trying to look in that area to see if there's any universities, and the University of Kent came up. And yeah, ever since I was just like, all right, this is my goal. I'll work towards studying at the University of Kent. And just during high school, when my grandfather passed away, I decided that I wanted to study psychology to learn more about the human brain and other aspects of psychological disorders. So that is kind of like how it kind of unfolded. And in my journey, I guess I didn't really prepare myself for anything. I didn't have any like connotations or perspectives or just anything really. I was just like excited to come and study at the University of Kent. But I think when I came to Canterbury, I had a whole shock because it's just like something that I've never experienced. The weather, the food, the community, the environment is all different to what I already know. So it's like I wasn't just leaving behind my friends and family, but I was leaving behind the traditions like Creole, like our food and our music. And yeah, I didn't think about that until I came. And then I was just like, where's all the Caribbean people? Where's this? Where's that? You know, and then really trying to find my home within Canterbury to just kind of connect myself because I felt disconnected from my culture. I wanted to kind of just, yeah, have a space where I just feel like home, you know. I think that was very important to me.
No, that sounds really inspiring because I'm pretty sure from what you've just said so far that you found that or you created it in the sense that you brought together. I'm assuming that there is a community of students that you were able then to bring together.
Yeah, so interestingly, around the time that I started at the University of Kent, there was two girls that was trying to do Caribbean Union. So this is apart from the African Caribbean Society that was already existing. So it's just for us. It's just for the Caribbean people. And I was kind of like a part of that. And it was kind of interesting to see it kind of formulate itself. And since then, I was quite involved up until my graduation. And yeah, it was just nice to kind of have people that I can connect with and we can understand each other on that cultural level. Some people were born here and they identify as Caribbean through their family members. And then some of them were just like me, just came from the Caribbean and they're in the UK. So they just solely identify as Caribbean and not Black British or Black Caribbean. So yeah, it was just kind of very nice and interesting to see the intersectionalities in the group. Although we are under the same umbrella as Caribbean.
Yeah, and that is such an empowering thing to do, both for yourself and obviously for the other students, because I think, you know, that's one of the things I remember about going to university, that you always find people very similar to yourself in many ways, but you have to sometimes try quite hard to actually, the first people you meet are often, you think, you know, they're doing a completely different degree to me. My students would often say that. They'd say it was like 5 days before they actually met somebody doing their, you know, like religious studies, which is the department that I'm in. And so they'll often sort of say, well, when I arrived, I met people who were just so different from me. And I thought, I don't belong here. And then after a few weeks, they're like, oh my God, this is the best place ever. So, you know, in a way, once you've actually made that initial sort of attempt, there's no going back.
Definitely. Yeah. I definitely agree.
Yeah. What about inspiring teachers? And I suppose both at school and university in that sense, people who taught you and made you, maybe you're still in touch with today and sort of had a bearing on the journey that you've made.
Definitely Dr. Christiana from the Department of Psychology at the University of Kent. She's a fantastic woman. Honestly, she really kind of, I guess, really supported me and really kind of brought that light of inspiration that I needed to push through my studies as well. There was another lady, she was part of the Department of Psychology as well. I'm trying to remember her name now. Oh, it'll come to me in the weirdest of times, I'm sure. But she doesn't work there anymore, but her support was also quite influential. When my grandmother passed away, I needed concessions and so forth. And then there's also, but there's this lecturer for business psychology, and I've done talks for her students as well. So I'm also connected with her, and I'm still connected with my supervisor, Hannah Swift, who also has a passion and an interest in dementia and aging in general and ageism, which has been quite interesting to work with her on as well.
Yeah, and I bet they're fascinated to hear what you've been doing since you've left, because it's, I mean, the link, I mean, it's pretty obvious why psychology was such an obvious, degree for you to do, because it's allowed you to take all these interests forward. So in that sense, it sounds as though the teachers, obviously, you're inspired by the teachers, but it sounds like the teachers might well be inspired by you.
Oh, that's so nice to hear.
I'm very sure they are. I mean, it's pretty, and I'm sure if they listen to this, to this interview, that they'll see the impact that they made. So that's really touching.
Dr. Dawn, that's her name, from the business psychology group. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Oh, that's brilliant. And just sort of thinking, Rhianna, I mean, all the many things that go on at university, and you sort of think, some people are into sport or politics, religion, and all sorts of different, interests. But, apart from your academic study, is there anything that a particularly like standout sort of thing, maybe a club, society, something that perhaps kind of sums up your 3 years at Kent? Obviously, perhaps avoiding COVID, obviously, in that answer, because I know that it disrupted you right at the end.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the Kent Pole Fitness Society was quite an interesting one because it's quite like body strength building and endurance. And then you also have the social aspect of it, meeting new people from different backgrounds. So that was quite an interesting one. I've never done pole fitness or even knew that was a thing until I went to University of Kent. So that was quite interesting. I think the breadth of student associations at the University of Kent is just amazing. There's so much to do. And there was also the Kent Caribbean Union, as I mentioned before, I think really sums up my 3 years of just learning about other Caribbean islands as well, because I was so close to my own culture. It's just about I just need to connect with Dominicans, this, that, and the other. But I think just being in that space really broadened my mindset to not just Dominica, but I need to be connecting with Bajans, with Saint Vincians, with Jamaicans, and that sort of thing, because we really need to have that regional interaction, because there's a lot of things that goes on in our community, and we can just really support each other, and also just friendship wise, it's just a vibe, just having people from different backgrounds and different islands come together. So I think that would also sum up my 3 years as well. Yeah, I think it would be those two societies, to be honest.
And I'm just thinking as well, because travel, I don't know if, I mean, obviously the last few years you probably haven't had as much chance to do that as you'd like, but have you had many opportunities to return to the Caribbean in certainly in recent years?
I haven't been there for 2 years now. Yeah. Going back in October this year.
And during lockdown, were you did you find that there was scope to catch up with family and friends through Zoom or Teams and so on? So were there ways of forging connections that maybe you wouldn't have done otherwise? Because I mean, I wasn't, I ne never occurred to me to use things like Zoom in order to meet people before lockdown. That's one of the few advantages of lockdown. There aren't many, but one is that it's given me a new way of connecting with people.
Definitely did a lot of Zoom and Team and that sort of thing. Not particularly with family, but just mainly with colleagues, with like new connections, building and fostering new connections, or following up or catching up with existing connections as well. With family, it was mainly on the phone, just kind of, yeah, just catching up that way. There were instances where family members would come over to our home. But social distancing and that sort of thing. But yeah, there were instances where we could see people, you know, as the rules are changing, we're also evolving as well. Can go, cannot go, can do this, cannot do this. So it was just back and forth. But whenever we had the opportunity to meet, we would just grab the opportunities to meet. So
I think you summed that up really well, because it suddenly occurred to me that, of course, in different parts, even just of the UK alone, you know, there are things you could do in England that you couldn't do in Scotland or Wales, or, you know, and I got family in Wales, and sometimes they were subject to, at different times, more stringent rules. So, you know, there was one evening I went to the cinema, and I was saying to one of my friends in Wales, you know, have you managed to see so-and-so yet? And they're like, oh no, the cinemas are closed here. And then like 2 weeks later, they were closed here as well. And they opened there before they opened here, you know. So yeah, the last few years has, I think, actually has been very disruptive to everybody. And you know, hopefully we're on the way out from all of that. But it sounds as though October's going to be amazing for you to be able to return. It sounds like you've probably got a really good itinerary already set in motion.
Yeah, just literally the documentary. I'm coming to do the documentary film on dementia, and then also catching up with my best friend, because she's got quite a lot going on at the moment. So yeah, I think it'll be really lovely to catch up with her and her boyfriend.
Yeah. And just as we start to wrap up, Rhianna, as you look back on your, I've got to say life and career, although obviously if you're probably thinking, no, I'm not quite at that stage yet, because obviously you're at the early stage in your career. But would you say, looking back, that your memories are predominantly positive ones?
I'd say so, yeah.
Because I often wonder, with, you know, I mean COVID is one good example, but sometimes the disadvantaged things or the disadvantageous things sometimes kind of make it, I don't know if, you know, can you be nostalgic about negative experiences? I suppose you can, but I suppose it's the way that you say, well, this happened and here I am now, and, you know, how did I get from where I was then to where I am now? And I suppose sometimes that's part of the challenges of life as well, isn't it? That you can sometimes say, I didn't want this to happen, but it happened, and here I am.
100%. I think, yeah, looking back, I can see the interlink between the challenges that I had and what I decided to do with them. So build solutions, or think about what could I do differently next time so this doesn't reoccur. So it's been quite useful and healing for me to reflect. And sometimes I do journal as well, which has been helpful in kind of bringing in this introspective narrative, and yeah, just kind of figuring out why I do certain things, and, you know, learning more about me. I think the most important thing that you can do is to learn about you, understanding your own value, understanding the value of your time, because then that can transcend into different things. You don't necessarily do certain things just because that you know the value of your time. So I think that's been quite important. And then self-compassion, I've also learned. So yeah, it's been quite interesting reflecting, because then I can kind of see the values that I uphold and want to continue to uphold, and just learning about the things I'd rather engage in because of the value of my time and other nuances. Yeah.
And it's interesting what you said about the journal, because, yeah, obviously, if you look back on that, in, you know, and I hope you do, I know some people who say things like that they rip up or they burn what they've written. And I keep everything, and I've kept a diary since I was 9 years old. So I'm going back 40, you know, over 40 years. But I find that, well, 40 years, I'm exactly 40 years, actually. Sorry, so I suddenly realized I was, you know, putting myself into a completely different bracket. But that's important. And I think, I don't know if you're the sort of person who then would look back over things that maybe you'd written before and sort of see, okay, this is what was occupying me then, and sort of, you know, tracing a path to where you are now.
Oh, 100%. I do keep a log of, I mean, this kind of year has taught me to be so disciplined with my time and disciplined with the goals and things I and get very clear on my goals as well, especially the mentors I've got in my circle. They will always keep me accountable to just be clear as to what I want to do and don't stray off the tangent. If I stray, it's fine, but, you know, just have some kind of constant at least, you know? So yeah, logging things, monthly things that I want to do, and just having like a checklist, a simple checklist. It doesn't have to be like a rigorous system, just making things as simple as they can be for myself, you know. It helps, because then I've got a year, like a yearly goal, monthly goal, and I can look back on that and I can see all the things that I've achieved, or what month was a quite busy month because you've got like 10, 15 to-do lists that you've completed or haven't. So yeah, it's been quite useful to kind of see that and see the interlink, see the bigger vision in terms of all of these things that I'm doing. So yeah.
And I suppose the question I've got to ask is, you know, when you were younger, when you were, you know, 5 or 15 or whatever, could you have imagined doing what you're doing now? Could you, you know, in that sense, do you sort of still think, you know, wow, you know, how did this happen? Or, you know, did you have a completely different sort of set of expectations or ambitions?
Oh yes, absolutely not. I think if my 15-year-old self could see me now, she'd be actually floored. She would not believe. She would just not believe the things that I've been able to accomplish, because 15-year-old me was just in between her careers already as she was 15, because we had career day and I would come as a different career almost every year without fail. I came as a doctor. I came as a lawyer. I think there was a time that I came as like a fashion designer or something like that. And yeah, I was just, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And like I said, it's really that point when my grandfather passed away, I immediately knew, all right, this is something I definitely want to contribute to and have uphold ever since. So I think, you know, and now from that time on to now has just been like, I don't even know. It's just been amazing. It's just been quite progressive to see the growth that, you know, not just even professionally, but personally. I'm definitely someone different to what I was at 15. And I'm really thankful for the growth, because 15-year-old me is just, she was, yeah, she'd been through a lot and she was relatively shy. So public speaking and even doing a TEDx talk and, you know, being flown to Rwanda to speak at a Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, it's just unbelievable. But unbelievable. I would not even step in front for assembly to do anything like that. So just to be on these grand scales, you know, these floors that I've walked, these rooms that I've been in, these, you know, people that I've networked with, it's just absolutely phenomenal. She would have been shocked to the core.
And that's often the way, isn't it? It's because, as you say, you know, and I was kind of similar sometimes, that, you know, you'd feel, much as you might want to, like, speak in an assembly or something, sometimes you're thinking, I can't do it. But actually, that gives you the impetus, that spurs you on to do it. And look what you've achieved since. So in a way, you needed to go through that experience of overcoming that particular obstacle, that barrier, and now you've more than surpassed it.
Absolutely. I think it's been quite a few years of character building and lots of things that has been preparing me. A lot of these experiences have been preparing me for the opportunities and just, I guess, the ambiguity of life. So, yeah.
And I got one more question for you, Rhianna. Would you consider yourself to be a looking back or a looking forward kind of person?
I alternate, but I think I'm more of a looking forward person. If I look back, it's to look forward. I don't just look back just for looking back's sake. Sometimes I do, but it's like maybe 10%. I think right now I'm just really focused on sharpening my skills, sharpening my knowledge and things like that to prepare for the future.
Yeah. That is such an inspiring answer. And actually, it's been so inspiring to meet you. And I think there are going to be even more great things to come. So I'm looking forward to following the many adventures ahead. But Rhianna, what a privilege to meet you. Thank you so much for being my guest this week.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. And I just want to say a last thank you to Lisa Clark. I remember her name now. That was amazing in helping me like get on with these concessions, because I had no energy. In fact, I was ready to withdraw my application from the University of Kent because I just thought I can't do it anymore. And she's the one that actually stopped me. She was like, I know deep down in your heart, Rhianna, this is not something you wanted to do. So because of her, I graduated, literally. If it wasn't for her, she was like any other staff member and she was just following procedures. And she was like, okay, great, see you later. I would not have a degree today. So I have a lot to thank for her.
Well, we'll make sure that Lisa hears or at least knows about this podcast, and I think that she'll be very proud of you, and I think, you know, you deserve to be very proud of yourself. I think that you've just done amazingly and wonderful to catch up with you. Thanks, Rhianna.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks, Chris.